When is everything done right in our life? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, doesn't matter, with the Absolute Philosopher. When is everything done right in our life? Well, everything is done right in our life when we feel that everything is done right in our life. Now you say that's too simple a solution, but no, it isn't. Do you always do everything the way you promise yourself you will do it? Do you always say the things you promise yourself that you'll say? I talked to a young man on the phone today, and I said to him, if you're going to go around telling everybody that you're supposed to take medicine, they're going to say, what's wrong with you? And so, then you're going to have to say, well, I've got the flu, or I've got this or that or the other. And you're going to have to name something, and you may have to lie about the appearance, or you may have to tell the truth about the appearance, and it's nobody's business, really. But the thing is, when are you true to yourself? When are you true to yourself? Would you like to be true to yourself? You say, oh, yes, I'd like to be true to myself. Okay. Now, the question is, who are you then? You know, are you your name? Are you the person that lives with your name? Are you the person that lives in your body? Or are you somebody else? You know, who are you? Are you your parents' child? Are you the heritage of your family? Are you all of these things? Science is coming up with some very interesting considerations recently. And first, they had a very bombastic and very strong statement that DNA proved everything. And that pissed a lot of people off. A lot of scientists said, no way, no way. It's just, you know, it's something to turn them off. And they said, we are going to prove that that's not so. And so they went about proving that it wasn't so. Before that, nobody bothered. They were looking for DNA to be the answer to a lot of circumstances that they couldn't figure out. But then, when the scientists came out, DNA is the only answer to all these problems, then these scientists, just because they like to be contrary, you know, and because they got a bull by the tail, and they thought, wow, let's really hold on to this guy. And so they held on. And they went into their chambers and into their think tanks and into their projects, however they figure all these things out. And they figured out that where DNA was thought to be the major, if not the only factor concerning sex, concerning intelligence, concerning structure of the body, concerning longevity and all these other beautiful things, that it had only an infinitesimal amount to do. What had the most amount was what? Can you imagine what it would be?
Thought.
Yes, that's true. Environment. Environment. If a person lives in a salubrious environment, then they have happy genes, they have happy DNA, they have happy bodies. When a person lives in a non-salubrious environment, an argumentative environment, an environment where people are unhappy and diseased and unhealthy, then they have problems. They have problems. And the problems come out through their body actions and are expressed through their body. Now, these scientists were brazen enough to say these things in the face of what science has said all along, and then people said to them, prove it, prove it. And they, like Einstein, they said, you prove it, prove we're wrong, prove that we're wrong. And so then everybody else started proving that they were wrong, and they did not prove that they were wrong. They found that not only was DNA a minor factor in the gameplay of the human body, the human mind, the human existence, but it was a very nominal gameplay, which was battered back and forth by environment, by how a child is brought up, what sort of a household he comes into, what sort of a world he's in, and all these other things. Now, as Heinz said so strongly, as I asked him, what is the dominant factor? It wasn't the gameplay, it wasn't the DNA, and it wasn't anything else but the environment. But Heinz, what is the environment?
Both.
Our thought.
Creations.
Our creations, that's right. It's our thought. Our environment, our world around in which we live is our creation, our thought. Many people can live through the same experience and not realize that there's a problem. They don't realize there's any problems, but many people live through those experiences and they're right at the crux of the problem. I was amused at an article, not at the incident, but at the article. The incident was that in 1995 or something like that, 98, in Minneapolis, the road department had certified a bridge as being unsafe, but nothing was done about it because it looked so safe. And now, this last week, the bridge collapsed. The bridge collapsed not in one place, but in eight places across the river, the Mississippi River up there. And many people were killed, and a school bus went down, and it was above water, yet I could see the picture, and the young men who were in the school bus and who were the who were taking care of the kids as they were coming back from an outing, you know, from a sporting outing or something, from camping or whatever, they were not much older than the kids, you know, and they were very startled. But being kids themselves, they said, come on, cool it, relax, you know. And the kids were singing, and the kids were happy, and the kids were quiet. Now, my goodness sakes. Then in the next cars, there were screaming and hollering and people being unhappy and all sorts of things that were going on around there. And then Heinz and I were standing in front of the filling station, filling our car with gas, and there's a little television set on top of the gas thing telling the story about this happening. And what should they highlight as a story? Many heroes were made today with the crash of the bridge, because people stopped their cars, got out, went down and helped the people who were in need, you know, because the help wasn't there yet. And so they went down and they pulled these people out of their cars, and one woman was trapped very badly, and they got her out, and all sorts of neat little things. We didn't listen to it much. I pressed the button, and next thing you know, we were watching something else. But the thing is, it was just really amusing, because heroes were made out of disasters, you know. And what a sad way to look at life, having heroes being made out of disasters. Heroes are people who keep positive thoughts. Now, were those children, the young people taking care of the children coming back from an outing, were they 16, 18 years old, 20, who knows how old they were. But they were just children along to guide the kids along and having a happy afternoon. And they did. But what was the magic that they did? The magic was that they sang. It was their attitude. They didn't take it as a tragedy. I mean, here their bus was up here on the bridge, and then the bridge came down, and now they're down there, right on the bottom of the whatever, you know. It's not all underwater. Some got underwater, but this was not one. And how interesting. How interesting. I mean, what a creation. The quiet dignity, the quiet peace in the minds of these young people were able to take all of their youngsters, and instead of having crying, yammering kids unhappy with the situation, wow, isn't this exciting? My goodness sakes, you know. nothing's up above to fall on us, you know, so we're okay, we're on top going down, you know, and just sort of a settle down, you know, with no great calamity, but certainly it's quite something different. Well, how do you approach the calamities and the drama and the DNA of your life? Do you approach it like you have no choice? That you have no choice in what's going to happen in your life, what's going to take place, or are you the master? Like Heinz says, it's your thought. Now, when are we going to use our thought to our benefit? When are we going to use our thought to our happiness? When are we going to use our thought to the conclusion of joy and peace and goodness in our life? We certainly are using it in the opposite direction too often, you know? Amazing. Now, I'm sitting at the dinner table, and conversation goes around the table as it always does. And then one person said, oh, this was so-and-so. The other person said, oh, no, it wasn't so-and-so, it was so-and-so, and this and that and that. And if, instead of creating an argument by discussions, just say, oh, how did you see it so-and-so? How did you see it that way? Not, you're wrong, I saw it this way and this was the right way. You may be right, but make the other person's contribution a valid contribution without making it being torn down by interpreting it and saying, hey, it wasn't that way at all. And who cares? Who cares whether it was that way at all? All we're caring about is having a silly little conversation. I say so often to all of you, and individually and together, I say, well, what did you do today? Well, today I did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I said, oh my goodness, how fascinating. Now, why didn't you pick out one item that you did today that you felt kind of fun about? And what did Heinz mention? Heinz says, well, did a lot of things. But what I had the most fun in was when I was in the jacuzzi. And I slipped into that wonderful warm jacuzzi. The temperature outside is over 100. And I slipped into that wonderful warm jacuzzi, which was about 82 or 85 or some outrageous figure. And I was just snuggly cuggly. And I laid back there and I had the most beautiful thoughts, the most beautiful thing. I felt like I could speak my word and manifest anything. Now, wouldn't that be the nice type of a conversation to come out of something? Wouldn't you all say, hey, I have to run over there in the heat of the day and try that jacuzzi out, you know, and I have to see if I can have that feeling too. And then Ellen wakes up from her midday nap. She lays down for about 5-10 minutes and saws a log or two, and then she wakes up. And when she wakes up, she turns to little Love and she says, Love, do you know what I was dreaming? I was dreaming, and she goes to tell Little Love her beautiful dream. And Little Love says, you should tell that at the dinner table when they ask you to say something amusing or to say something that causes a conversation. Mom, you should do that, you know. And Ellen says, but if I do that, then there'll be an argument over whether I'm right or wrong, or whether what I say is correct or incorrect, and I don't want to start an argument. I just want to have a nice, quiet dinner, you know. But Mom, you don't have quiet dinners. You should have dinners filled with sharing and conversation and love. And you see, this is what we do. We don't listen to our kids. The Kennedy kids in the Kennedy household were all told, okay, you're going to be quizzed today on what's going on in the world news. Read your newspapers. Watch what's going on. They didn't have television yet too much, but maybe a little bit. And so watch what's going on and pay attention. And so Papa got them to the table and he says, all right, John, what's happened here? All right, you know, Joe, what happened here? And he goes through the whole family and he doesn't make them feel bad. He just say, well, what's the condition of the franc in world politics today? Is it a very powerful coin or not, you know? And it make it up. The kids surely made it up, because then they realize that they are the ones who make up the history. They make up life. They make up stories, and it's fascinating, really fascinating. You know, when Mr. Kennedy, the daddy, was ambassador to Great Britain. He just had the greatest time with the prince, or with the queen, and with the king. He would take his family to the palace, and they would be royally treated, and they would eat with the queen or the king and the, you know, whoever was running the show at the time. And then the prime minister would be there, and all these great people. And the Kennedys were representing the United States of America, and all the kids were there. All 16 kids, wow, whatever number they have. And fantastic, fantastic. And can you imagine the attitudes those kids had? I mean, here they are hobnobbing with the powerhouses of the world. Naturally, they're going to be the powerhouse themselves. And they hear the stories that they tell around the table. And sometimes a story might get started, and the queen might say, I'd like it to be a positive story. Oh, yes, Your Majesty. And so then he changes the direction of the story to a positive story. And is the queen upset, thinking the guy's lying? No. She says, I have enough world news that's hairy. I don't need any more, you know, not at my supper table. But you see, that's all part of the game. And are you willing to play such a game? Are you willing to be in such a game? Are you willing to get the most out of it? Well, if you do, put the best of yourself into it. Use your imagination. Use your creativity. Use your thinking and watch. Because as you do, things happen that you never could dream would happen. And they make your life pretty exciting. Pretty exciting. Have you been there? Have you been there at the Queen's table?
Mm-hmm.
Have you been at the Prime Minister's table? Have you been at the various other tables of the leaders of the world?
Sure.
You've been with the Pope for dinner? Have you been with all these people? And you jokingly say, mm-hmm,
yeah.
But you don't mean jokingly. Yes, you were there.
Yeah.
Were you there in consciousness?
Yeah.
If you were there in consciousness, you were there as much as you're ever going to be there. There's a lot of people who are there in unconsciousness. They're bored to tears because they can't find the harmony, the magic that's going on. And lots of magic is going on all around us all the time. So open your eyes to that logic and that magic. Not that you believe in it, but have fun with it. And know that I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.
Thank you.